Breaking news today on Seculo as President Biden is set to deploy 1,500 U.S. troops.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
Hey, welcome to Seculo. We are taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. You heard it right. President Biden is going to send 1,500 U.S. troops, deploy 1,500 U.S. troops. Where? Is it going to be Ukraine? Is it somewhere in Asia because of Chinese aggression? Maybe the Middle East because of Iranian aggression? No, it's because the southern border has gotten so bad and Title 42 is expiring that, you know, May 11th, when it clicks over to May 12th at midnight, there is no more Title 42 removal power, which means everybody who crosses illegally cannot be just expelled under the pandemic rules. We know from Senator Hagerty, he wants to put in an epidemic rule because of the fentanyl crisis that would allow them to continue to have that expulsion power. But so far, Democrats don't want that. They've actually voted against it three times. So President Biden acknowledging that they have no plan at the border. And we've heard that over and over from administration officials. Now the plan is, let's use our U.S. military to do that. Now, it's interesting. You might think, hey, that works great because the U.S. military can be with Customs and Border Patrol. They'll really secure the border. But here's the issue. Because of U.S. laws that are on the books and about like martial law and posse comitatus and things like that, really, they can only play an administrative secondary role. They can be armed, but that's only to protect themselves. They are not on the front line, even though that's what they're used to doing. So what will they be doing? Administrative work. It will. It certainly could help CBP. But when President Trump had to do the same thing because the border was so out of control when he came into office, while they were starting to construct the wall, you know, they were just starting to get the new policies in place that really did start to slow down illegal immigration, he sent 5,200 troops down to the border and was mocked by the New York Times. They called it an election season response to migrants. They said that Mr. Trump's decision to send troops showed weakness instead of strength, and quoted a group saying, this is using the troops as props. Now, that's what they said about President Trump. About President Biden, Logan, they're just reporting it as news, as, look, he's doing something to secure the border. It's like they forget what they wrote just a few years ago about the same kind of action. And I'd ask, too.
Politics 101.
When Trump sent 5,200, that seems legit. 1,500, that actually does sound a lot more like props.
Absolutely. It does seem like props. But yeah, of course they forget what they said. Just like all politicians, they flip-flop. If it's your side, it's bad. If it's your side, it's bad. And it always happens this way, where you have the Biden administration deploying, like you said, 1,500 troops on paper. Sounds nice. But when you know how many people are crossing the border each and every day, it's far from enough. Don't take this as just a win. They're doing something. I mean, sure, it's great that they're doing something, but like you said, at least 5,000 felt like some sort of impressive number. This is 1,500 U.S. troops that are being deployed, and they have to. In the fact that we have to deploy our U.S. troops to the border is a sad state to be in to begin with.
Because they created the problem. President Trump had been solving the problem. The wall was being built. It was working. We had deals with Mexico. We had Operation Talon. To track traffickers. We had the Remain in Mexico policy that he was mocked about, and that was actually working because we made a financial deal with Mexico to say, house them there. Don't let them cross our border. And they were doing that. Then Biden comes in, wants to reverse all those policies. Then he gets this reprieve from it with Title 42, which allows the immediate expulsion. But even under Title 42, while it still exists today, in the last 72 hours, over 22,000 people were apprehended at the border in the last 72 hours. That does not include the gotaways.
What was that number again?
22,000 in the last 3 days.
And we're sending 1,500 people.
That's with Title 42.
Daily.
That's with Title 42 expulsion. So there's at least 40,000 people, probably more now, that are waiting at the border until Title 42 is gone because they know then you cannot expel them immediately and they get to enter the United States.
We probably need to clarify. We'll talk about next time. There's not someone like creating a man wall of troops here. They're
no,
probably
it's
not going to be doing
they're what working, you're even doing office work.
Exactly. Give us a call 1-800-684-3110.
Gracious Secular, but don't worry about the troops being deployed that President Trump was mocked for doing while he was on a path. By the way, that wasn't his solution to the border crisis. That was a temporary move as they were building the wall and putting in policies and negotiating policies like Remain in Mexico, which were working and got the border, the numbers down. But because Title 42 is coming to a close, I just want to remind you what we just said before we went to the break. Title 42 ends on May 11th. So at midnight, May 12th, people crossing the border cannot be immediately expelled by Customs and Border Patrol. They have to be processed. They then have to be housed. And we've been told that they have an alternative to detainment. So they're not even going to be detained in a lot of cases. It's going to be enhanced alternatives to detainment.
The idea is that there are so many people waiting for this moment to happen.
They're waiting, right?
They're well aware that this is coming to an end.
But there's also a lot of people who aren't waiting. So in the last 3 days, Customs and Border Patrol reported that 22,000 people were apprehended at the southern border by them in the last 3 days. That does not include the people who got away. So while we expect a flood of folks, illegal immigrants, coming after Title 42 expires, we're already seeing, Logan, still consistently high numbers. But Lynn, listen to Karine Jean-Pierre. She said, Logan, that Joe Biden has cut illegal immigration by 90%. Okay, if that was true, I don't think we'd have 22,000 people coming across in 3 days. I don't even think there'd be a border crisis anymore. We could move on. Take a listen.
He has tools that he's used to make sure that we do this. We actually deal with the immigration system in a humane way, and in a way that is that actually deals with what we're seeing at the border. And that's why you've seen the parolee program be so successful. When it comes to illegal migration, you've seen it come down by more than 90%, and that's because of the actions that this president has taken.
Okay. The actions they were taking is just switching oranges for oranges. So what happened was there was a window of time earlier this year where encounters with Venezuelans, Nicaraguans, and Cubans dipped 90%. That was after a policy change. They were still being encountered, but they were no longer considered illegal immigrants. They were considered parolees, humanitarian parolees. There was a change in the policy. They were allowed special status to come in. So there was a dip amongst that group, but only that group. And it wasn't that less of them came in, it's that they came in under a different program. So they weren't technically illegal immigrants. They are just playing with the numbers here, with how you categorize things. And so they changed the rules to make it look like the numbers are better. They are not. In fact, I bet more people are coming from those countries right now because they can legally come as a parolee, as someone coming for humanitarian because there's a humanitarian crisis in their country, which if there really is one, you need to tell the American people, explain it, why we are allowing this number of people in. But it gets even worse, Logan, because the illegal immigrants from China at the southern border have shot up over 800%. And illegal immigrants from Venezuela, those are ones who aren't eligible for the humanitarian parole, those are back up as well. I think that number is at its highest ever. So this claim that Joe Biden cut illegal immigration by 90%, I hope I just walked you through how he just pulled a numbers game on you. And even that numbers game only adds up if you're talking about four countries.
Let's remember how Secretary Mayorkas described a secure border just 2 days ago on Sunday.
What's the definition of secure border to you?
It is, in the context in which we are working, it is maximizing the resources that we have available to us to deliver the most effective results.
Okay. I mean, it's just, it's word salad, which we've come to expect, but we do now know, is that as much as in the past, someone who appears to be doing this much damage to your administration, giving this much ammo, if you will, to your opponents, to come out every day and say, can you believe this? This is so absurd. We have a crisis. People are dying. Americans, the number one cause of death for Americans between the age of 18 and 45 is fentanyl. It all comes across the southern border, or the vast majority of it does, and it emanates in China. We're not dealing with any of these issues. And you leave these people in charge, Logan, it's because they are playing the political game that the Biden administration believes in, which is a total open border policy. So if they need to change someone's categorization from illegal immigrant to humanitarian parolee, and they can claim the numbers are down, even though it's the same amount of people, they will do that.
It's a shell game. It's just moving people around.
And they don't mind that Mayorkas gets beat up on Capitol Hill.
No, that's kind of why they're there. They're kind of there to deflect a little bit. But it's sad. I think that this is one of those moments, again, not unlike what we talked about yesterday, where you have to start losing any really hope that stuff is going to get better. And the idea of sending 1,500 U.S. troops, as if that's going... I mean, look, these are, I'm sure, incredible people. But the fact that there's no way that they can really do anything to stop what's about to happen. And acknowledging the fact, which is pretty interesting, they had to, at least a little, that things could get very chaotic very soon.
Right.
And things are about to get out of control. And that the people who are leaving, you know, wherever they're coming from, I mean, obviously you're crossing the border, they're waiting for this moment. They're very well aware of the Title 42 ending. It's not like people who are escaping an immediate threat that's happening right now in their lives. These are people that are waiting, watching the hours tick down till they know, great, I'm going to have a place to stay. I'm not going to get immediately deported if I get caught. And mass majority will not.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, we talk about that as well. It's like, sure, Title 42 ends. It's not like all of a sudden these are going to all get caught and sent back. Certainly for these people, it's not going to happen. But the ones that do know that they're at least going to be treated a little bit differently.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, this to me is just so disheartening. As an American, one, we're going to have to use our troops because things have gotten so bad under the Biden administration. Remember, when President Trump came in, it was because things had gotten so bad under the Obama-Biden administration, so he had to utilize troops because we just did not have enough people down at the border to do the job. But he was not just doing that as a solution.
He had a plan.
That was a temporary fix. And then the plan was, we're going to build the wall. We're going to negotiate, remain in Mexico. He got mocked for that. But he also got mocked for moving the troops down. So where's the New York Times on mocking Joe Biden? Are they going to say that it's just a bunch of props? That this is a misuse of our military? Or are they going to say, look, he's doing something. And if he does anything, he should be praised. We always want to remind you, the same media just a couple of years ago was mocking a similar move. Just because Donald Trump did it, or just because a Republican does it, it's somehow not legitimate. If a Democrat does the exact same thing, it's just a news story that you report as fact. You don't add a lot of commentary, and in fact, you might even praise it. This, to me, allowing a press secretary from the White House to get up and say that Joe Biden has cut illegal immigration by 90%, this should be on every single channel. Everybody should be walking through, because you have to educate yourself to respond to that. And that's what we keep doing on here is, okay, how did they get to that number? How do you respond to someone you might know, a family member on the left or a friend who repeats that? Well, you have to then understand humanitarian parole and the fact that they changed the rules for four major countries that were providing not a majority necessarily, but a vast number of the illegal immigrants to America. So they recategorized them as humanitarian parole. They're no longer illegal immigrants, so they don't count towards the number. But at the same time, you're seeing the surges. 22,000 people in 3 days crossed. And that's before Title 42 comes to an end next week. I mean, Logan, I think we are about to see massive chaos like we have not seen in years at the southern border because of Title 42 and the pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, the fact they're taking any action at all, to be honest, shows you that's probably going to happen. The fact that they know they have to do something, that the Democrats know they have to do something at the border, there has to be some action taken to try to mitigate this chaos. I think that it's not a win. What it is sad, because you know that they could have done a lot more leading up to this.
Yeah, absolutely.
We got a bunch of lines open. We'd love to hear from you, and a couple people on hold. We'll get to you as well. 1-800-684-3110. Let's actually take this call. We've got a minute and a half. Let's go to Art, who's calling on line one. Art, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks, guys. My question is there anything that can be done, legislation, anything they're just going to let this thing expire? Because I've heard also that for the first time ever, the U.S. is opening up processing centers across the border even to help these people come in.
Yeah, that's correct. Listen, can you have legislation? Yeah. Senator Hagerty was on last week with us, and he talked about how three times Democrats have voted against his legislation. His legislation would continue Title 42 because they would declare a fentanyl epidemic because it's the number one cause of death of Americans between the ages of 18 and 45. And then at least Customs and Border Patrol would have their most important tool, the expulsion power, to immediately expel illegal immigrants without having to go through the processing. The Democrats have voted against it three times. You would think they'd want to protect Americans from drug overdosing and death, but they don't. They're playing long-term politics with this and demographic games, saying, you know what? Ultimately, we're going to legalize this group of people. They're going to vote Democrat for decades to come. They don't care about the dead Americans.
Sad truth.
We'll be right back on Seculum. To Seculo. Anthony Blinken sat down with Benjamin Hall off of Fox News. It's great to see him back reporting and back interviewing after the injuries he incurred, serious injuries he incurred, reporting on the war in Ukraine. It was just a reminder that regardless of what you think is right U.S. policy, wrong U.S. policy, the war correspondents go in there so that we can all see what's going on, not to take sides, but just to report on the news. And they risk their lives to get us that information, and he certainly did. But now he's back, and he asked specifically when he sat down with Tony Blinken. There's two things we want to focus on. The first was the Hunter Biden letter, because as you know, the CIA director Mike Morrell has come out and said, you know, I didn't even know he testified this to the Judiciary Committee that prior to Secretary Blinken calling me, I had no intent to write this statement. He says I did not. He said so. The call from Blinken triggered you writing joining the statement. It did, yes. And Morrell testified that around October 17th, Blinken reached out to him to discuss the Hunter Biden laptop story. And at the time, Blinken served as a senior advisor to the Biden campaign. So take a listen when Benjamin Hall asked him about the letter. Bite 10.
Can you explain what your role was in that and if you incentivized it?
Well, first, one of the great benefits of this job is that I don't do politics and don't engage in it. But with regard to that letter, I didn't wasn't my idea, didn't ask for it, didn't solicit it. And I think the testimony that the former deputy director of the CIA, Mike Morrell, put forward confirms that.
Yeah, Mike Morrell didn't ask Blinken to come, whether or not the letter was his idea. I'm assuming the letter was Hunter Biden's idea. You know, someone else's idea that they were all then implementing. Did he ask for the letter? I don't think that anyone is accusing Blinken of asking for the letter. Hunter Biden was asking for the letter.
He's not answering the actual question being
asked. And then did he solicit the letter? Well, that's the same as not asking for it. He just said the same thing twice right there. That does not contradict what Mike Morrell testified to, which is that prior to getting a call about this from Blinken, I had no intent on writing this statement. So the idea, again, and by the way, Blinken says in there the great thing about his job as Secretary of State, which is a political appointed job, by the way, you're appointed by the President of the United States, who's partisan, is that I don't have to get involved in politics. You know, he says that, right? Except for the fact that when the letter was done, he was not Secretary of State. You know what he was? A senior advisor to the Biden campaign. Logan, he was directly involved in politics. He was a political hack, if you want to call it that, or political operative.
And he still is, really, if you look at what they're saying. So, you know, Benjamin Hall, again, was interviewing him, asked Blinken this question. He asked him about the Biden laptop, whether it was Russian disinformation. Let's take a listen.
Do you accept that the laptop is not Russian disinformation?
Again, from my perspective, I'm not engaging in politics. I've got a lot on my agenda, things that we've just talked about, trying to help the Ukrainians in the Russian aggression against them, engaging with allies and partners around the world, and dealing with some of the challenges posed by China. We have a situation now in Sudan that's fully occupied my time, so that's where my focus is.
There you go.
So
completely deflected it again.
Yeah, I mean, no, he didn't solicit the letter.
From my perspective, I'm not engaging in politics.
From my perspective, and I've got a lot on my agenda, so I can't ask you about answer if you were wrong, which, by the way, the news reported they were wrong. I mean, all media outlets have now said, so I assume he sees the news, and he saw that the news said that it was not Russian disinformation, that the laptop was, in fact, legitimately Hunter Biden's, and he could have left it there and said, well, the news did report that, you know, it was...
things were confirmed.
Yeah, I'm not going to get into any more than that. Okay, at least... But they will never acknowledge any of their wrongdoing, which makes them bad leaders. They don't have to answer questions. You know what was also pretty outstanding? Also just upsetting. And Benjamin Hall conducted himself very professionally. I'm not sure I would have in his same situation. Because he also asked about whether or not President Biden has put us in a safer place in the world. Take a listen to Blinken.
Do you think that the world is now a safer place under the Biden administration than it was under the Trump administration?
In my judgment, what I can say is this. I think our standing, the standing of the United States around the world in the last few years, is much stronger than it was. And you can see this in survey after survey, and I can feel it in the work that I'm doing every single day.
The world is much stronger. Our standing in the world is much stronger than it was. Benjamin Hall lost his legs. The person he answered that to, the reporter there, Benjamin Hall, maybe you've seen his story on Fox News, was nearly killed covering the Ukraine war, which was started because President Biden and Blinken were unable to diplomatically stop and negotiate a stop to that war before it ever begun. Because remember, they couldn't stop Crimea either. So a guy asking him the question about, do you think America's in a better place right now, has no legs. He is able to walk, thank God, because of medical approvals. He's got prosthetics and went through the story on Fox News. You should watch it just to see his return and kind of the ups and downs going through that process, having young children. But the idea that he could sit across from him and say without any irony, yeah, we're in a safer place, except for the fact that you were covering a major war that started because our diplomacy failed, because the U.S. doesn't have the standing in the world that it used to, Logan, where if it told the Russians, you better knock it off,
they do.
They knocked it off.
Right.
Or if you told the Saudis, who should be our friends and allies, don't do a deal with Iran, let's repair our relationship, they don't do a deal with Iran, but they have. Look at Sudan, they leave Americans behind. Afghanistan, they leave Americans behind. American men and women get killed. So there he is. He's talking to a reporter, a war reporter, who lost his legs covering a war that they couldn't prevent. Yeah. The strongest country in the world could not prevent.
Yeah, couldn't prevent that. But we are going to take our time, and we'll send some troops somewhere. We'll just send them to the southern border, but not too many of them. Just enough to make it look like we did something without actually doing anything. Look, we have a second half hour coming up on this broadcast. I'd love for you to join us. If you don't get us on your local station, we broadcast live the full hour on Rumble, on YouTube, on Facebook, and we're also at aclj.org. You can also find it archived later on your favorite podcast players. So try to find it. If you lose us, come join us live. We're at another half hour coming up. We've got Rick Grinnell coming up later. We've got other guests coming in. It's going to be a jam-packed second half hour, but I'd love to take your phone calls. Give us a call. 1-800-684-3110. 1-800-684-3110. Also put your comments in on all different platforms, and we'll get to some of those as well. We have our team always monitoring those comments, so don't think your comments are unseen. Someone on our team is reviewing all of them, and then we get some of them to bring up on the air as well. So get those in while we're about to go to break. We want to tell you to do that, though, and support the work of the ACLJ. Go to aclj.org. We still got a minute left here, Jordan. I think what's really important here is to really showcase that, obviously, it sounds like a win on paper with I kind of want to get back to the border situation for those who are just joining us now, because a lot of people are. It sounds like a win on paper if you hear 1,500 troops. Okay, we're trying to do something. But we'll explain even coming up a reset just why it's not.
Yeah, absolutely. And we want you to support the work of the ACLJ at aclj.org. That's aclj.org. We need your financial support to continue all the work that we do. It's not just the broadcast, it's all the attorneys, the government affairs experts, the offices around the world, experts like Rick Grinnell on the team. That's because of your financial support of the ACLJ, and you have to continue that support so that we can continue our work. So donate today at aclj.org. That's aclj.org. And check out again, I think ACLJ.org/coverup. We want to send folks there, so send your friends and family to ACLJ.org/coverup.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
Hey, welcome to Seculo. We are taking your calls to 1-800-684-3110. So we're talking about a couple major issues. One, President Biden sending 1,500 troops, deploying 1,500 troops. Now, is this in a military conflict somewhere around the world? No. It's because that's how bad it's gotten in our southern border. And when Title 42 comes to a close at the end of next week, we know that there are tens of thousands of people waiting for that moment because the Customs and Border Patrol will lose the power to expel, which they had under the pandemic, under Title 42, without processing. And even without Title 42 coming to a close, in the last 3 days, they had encounters with 22,000 illegal immigrants on the southern border. Just think about the size of those numbers. That does not include the people who got away into our country.
Right. Remember, that's the...
Think about all the fentanyl that just came in, all the terrorists that might have come through, and cartel members. And we're seeing horrendous violence. We saw out of Texas this manhunt that's going on.
That one is the worst. It may not be the worst, but multiple
times has been illegal immigrants. Similar to that story, that cartel killing out of Northern California.
Well, that one was not only it wasn't just illegal immigrant. That's someone who had been caught and deported like 3 or 4 times.
DUI, convicted of a DUI.
Yeah, had all these problems, but somehow still made it back to the country, and now created an egregious act of murder of pretty much a whole family over nothing. This is where the border crisis has gotten out of hand. It's why we actually launched our new campaign, ACLJ.org/coverup, just to start to give you a story. Here's just one of the stories that we were a part of that you can see. And this is that there was a known terrorist, that there were good, heroic border protection agents that were down there. They made the stop. They talked about it publicly, said we trapped these known terrorists. We caught them. Is immediately deleted. Why? Because the Biden administration didn't want you to know that these heroes stopped terrorists from coming into the country, because they don't want to acknowledge that there are terrorists coming into the country through our southern border. They don't acknowledge really that anyone is coming through the southern border. That is why you have a situation where, of course, Biden never visits and those things happen. But why you spending, that's why it should be actually more alarming, Jordan, that 1,500 troops are being deployed, not just because Title 42 is, and it means they know that it's about to get even more out of hand than it already is.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I mean,
be alarmed that they're sending these troops.
It is actually shocking because it is so against what they would normally do as administration. I want to go back to the folks too. We're also talking about Blinken. We're going to talk about that with Rick Rennell in a minute too when he joins us. Roberta called in from Colorado on line one. Hey, Roberta.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say the interview with Blinken reminded me of a conversation with my grandson. I ask a question and I get a completely different answer. And I have to say, that is not the question I asked.
Right. Yeah, it's like dealing with kids, right? I mean, like, you ask, like, hey, did you do this? Well, I didn't directly. I didn't actually tip that over. Were you responsible for it? Well, actually, the issue is the difference between a kid is it's really easy to identify that with a kid. Unfortunately, a lot of people just take these words from these high-level folks and don't analyze that they just did the same thing. They just use a bunch of words that meant the same thing. I didn't solicit. I didn't ask for it. That's the same thing. No one was accusing Blinken of even originating, of being the original author of the Hunter Biden letter. He was being accused of someone who was soliciting names, asking people to join the letter. And he was acting as a political operative at the time, which when he even answers the question, he says, "Yo, great thing about my job is I don't have to be involved in politics, except when we're accusing you of doing this. And when Mike Morrell, your friend at the CIA, is accusing you of this or saying that you did this, not even accusatory when he did it, you were a political operative for the Biden campaign." So you can't take that out of it. But it's very typical from this administration and their communication strategy. We'll take your calls, 1-800-684-3110. Join us on Seculo. Share it with your friends and family, especially if you're watching the broadcast. Share it. Support the work of the ACLJ at aclj.org. We're right back with Rick Ronell. Seculo. We are taking your calls to 1-800-684-3110. We're joined by our senior advisor for foreign policy and national security, Rick Ronell, former acting director of national intelligence. He's been at the cabinet level when it comes to intelligence matters, and also former ambassador to Germany. Because I say all that again, Rick, I don't always go through it always, but I say it this time because I want to play for this for our audience if they missed it in the first half hour, because Benjamin Hall, who it's great to see him back reporting the news again after the injuries, serious injuries he suffered covering the war in Ukraine, so interestingly enough, from his experience, he asked Secretary Blinken about our standing in the world right now. Take a listen, everybody.
Do you think that the world is now a safer place under the Biden administration than it was under the Trump administration?
In my judgment, what I can say is this. I think our standing, the standing of the United States around the world in the last few years, is much stronger than it was. And you can see this in survey after survey, and I can feel it in the work that I'm doing every single day.
Okay, so Rick, I've kind of learned from you what he might be referring to there and why he wouldn't say. Let's talk about first what he wouldn't say. He would not say, Rick, that we are actually in a stronger place, because I think he even knew if he said that directly, it would be mocked widespread, even by the liberal media. I mean, who were just being honest about the amount of conflict there is in the world right now.
Yeah, look, he had two caveats there. I hope people understood. The first thing he said, the first words out of his mouth were, "In my judgment," which makes it immediately say, not in everybody's judgment. I know everybody doesn't think we're safer, but I'm Secretary of State, so I'm going to say, in my judgment, in my personal opinion. That's the first caveat. The second one was that he was saying, in my circles, I'm hearing. And so what that really means is, you know, when he's at the State Department with all his other political appointees, and when he's at the cabinet meetings with all the other political appointees, we in the Biden administration are sticking together and saying things are better. And look, he's got the luxury of doing this because the media, they just parrot whatever they say. You've got somebody like John Carl, who is the ABC White House correspondent. And if you look at his reporting, his social media, it's all on Donald Trump. Here's the guy for a network who is supposed to be covering Joe Biden and the Biden administration, and John Carl cannot stop talking about Donald Trump. It's really unbelievable, but the White House knows this. Joe Biden knows this, which is why the Los Angeles Times turns over their question word for word, and everybody just does a collective yawn. The Washington, D.C. silence on that L.A. Times piece and the lack of coverage, unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, the second part, I think, Rick, we've learned from you, our audience has learned from you, is the consensus. And that Blinken might actually believe our standing in the world is better because Europeans and Western Europeans and the UN likes the Biden administration more. So in his view and judgment, even though the world seems like it's out of control and on fire in so many places, or right on the brink of being on fire in so many places, that, you know, we are more popular again at international institutions, as if that makes a big difference if we have no power on the world stage.
Yeah, one thing I've learned through diplomacy is be careful with the roar of the crowd. When the crowd is cheering you on and clapping and they're liking you, it's probably because you have an incredibly weak position and they are now able to be over you and to leverage that. And so what we know about Joe Biden is that in his 40 plus years, he likes to talk about all the world leaders that he's friends with and how much they like him. But I can tell you that, going toe-to-toe with Chancellor Merkel, someone who I respect, by the way, because she stands up for Germany, she absolutely wants a weaker United States. She does not want a United States that's telling her to pay her bills or to not build a Russian pipeline, the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. She wants a U.S. government that she can control, that when she comes to and says, hey, this is what I want, they say, oh, okay, well, let's talk about that, or let's do that. And that's what she gets with Joe Biden. There's no question. He is popular with the people who want a weaker United States because they want to be having leverage over the U.S.
Yeah, it sometimes feels like that's his own fan club, is the people who are cheering on the weakness of the United States. And we saw that a little bit at the correspondence dinner. It feels like he said it became just a joke. Like that everything, obviously, you want to have fun at those events. They're made for comedy. But when some of the jokes are, I don't take questions from interviews or I prep stuff, you're like, well, yeah, okay, at least you're acknowledging the fact it's not just... It's not just an old man thing. It's the fact that you are refusing to answer these questions. You bring up the fact that they're always constantly blaming the Trump administration still, whether that's in the press or actually within the administration. It seems like at this point, 3 years in, but you're right. They know if they do it, they get press.
The silent message from that White House correspondence dinner, which the media in that room all missed, was, I don't need to answer questions because you guys are giving me the best coverage I've ever seen in my entire life. So I'm going to keep going.
Why would you be the person who goes out there and wants to get those questions? You don't. Yeah.
Yeah. No, we just got a comment on Rumble. This is interesting because I like that our viewers and the people that engage our show, Rick, are deep thinkers when it comes to stuff. And they don't just go immediately to maybe the conflict zones that they're seeing in the world, like Ukraine or Sudan. But they actually wrote in and said they believe that the Saudi-Iran deal is probably the worst failure so far of the Biden administration. What would be your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a very good comment because it really changes us historically for a long time. I'm not sure I could come up with what is the worst deal because there's so many bad ones. You know, but when you go around the world, I don't think that there's a country that is in better shape under the Biden administration. I mean, you look through the Middle East, you look through Asia, Latin America, I just, even Europe. I mean, Europe has had their borders rewritten now with a huge, massive war under Joe Biden. European leaders need to get much stronger and much louder about this. But one of the benefits that the European leaders have is the Biden administration is paying the bill. The American taxpayer is paying the bill. But I think the Rumble comment is a good one because it's fundamentally changing the Middle East for a very long time. I don't think that you can overemphasize the move that China has been making over the last couple of years, because all of the Democrats and media in Washington keep saying Russia, Russia, Russia. And meanwhile, Beijing loves it because they're doing all this under the radar stuff. You look at what's happening in Africa, the African leadership having enough. They literally are now talking that and complaining that the Biden administration is talking down to them. That's pretty much a red alert for America and a news flash to the Chinese to move further into Africa.
Yeah, Blinken also got asked about his role in the laptop story. That's because the CIA director at the time, Mike Morrell, his friend, said, you know, I wasn't even thinking about a letter like this until I got a call from Anthony Blinken about it. And then Anthony Blinken got asked about it on Fox News. He's being asked to come testify to Congress on it because now he's kind of conflicting, though I don't, though if you listen closely, I don't think he's actually denying any of that. But I wanted to play this one for you, Rick, too, and get your reaction.
Can you explain what your role was in that and if you incentivized it?
Well, first, one of the great benefits of this job is that I don't do politics and don't engage in it. But with regard to that letter, I didn't wasn't my idea, didn't ask for it, didn't solicit it. And I think the testimony that the former deputy director of the CIA, Mike Morrell, put forward confirms that.
So another very carefully chosen words, like it wasn't my idea, the letter. He didn't ask for it or solicit it, which is the same thing said twice. But, Rick, again, it's like the question he got about are we in a better place in the world. When he gets asked about this, he doesn't deny that he talked to Mike Morrell about it. So he doesn't want to call his friend a liar. But he tries to, again, shift the focus. He's not a political actor, but he was at the time. He was a political advisor to the Biden campaign when this letter was being drafted.
Yeah, look, he's not very good at messaging because the first thing that he says is, I don't do politics, which innately means that letter was politics. And so I can't answer that because I don't do politics at all. So I'm not going to answer that question. So he gives himself away as that was politics. But the reality is, you hit it, Jordan. He is saying, well, I wasn't the author. Well, we're not suggesting that you have to be the author to be in trouble here. What he did do, if you read the memo, What Mike Morrell says that he did do is he called up people, including Mike Morrell, and said, wow, did you see this Washington Post story that the Russians might be responsible for Hunter Biden's laptop? Well, I'm very concerned about that. Now, look, in political world, we know what that means. It means that if you want to please this administration or that campaign, the Biden campaign, and Biden and Blinken was on the Biden campaign, if you want to please them, then you better respond and say, yeah, I'm just as outraged as you are. But here's the clincher. The Biden campaign placed that Washington Post story saying that it could be Russian disinformation, could be. Washington Post is saying, oh, well, we only said that it could be. And now everybody's running fast by jumping to conclusions after that. That's the Washington Post position. But this is all a game. They knew what they were doing 3 weeks before the election. They're telling everybody, don't look at that laptop. It's Russian disinformation. Look over there at Russia. And meanwhile, Beijing was applauding.
I'm sure they've got something they're cooking now in preparation for who may be Donald Trump again. You wonder what they're cooking up this time. It's Rick. As always, we appreciate all of your insight into that on the foreign policy side, on the domestic side. We're taking your calls, folks. 1-800-684-3110. We have got a lot of calls, Logan, and I want to get to them at 1-800-684-3110. You still have time if you call right now to be a part of the show. Let's go to Mike.
Mike in Indiana, line two. Yep, you're up. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I think today with your discussion, it's a good time to remember that in 2014, John McCain said that Anthony Blinken was dangerous for America.
Yeah, no, we actually, our team, our production team, Mike, when they saw that call.
Yeah, great call.
One, it's a great reminder that the Biden team is the Obama team, just grown up a little bit. They just took the people who were the deputies and made them the secretaries. And it's one thing if you had like a continuous administration. I wouldn't be surprised like if Donald Trump became president again, you're going to see some of the same folks in the office. But if you thought you were going to get like an exact copy, you really have. And you look at our standing in the world, it's very similar to under the Biden, under the Obama years, but possibly even worse, because even President Obama thought that Biden was no good when it came to foreign policy decisions. Usually he can't even say the word on air that he said he would do when he was asked to make decisions about that. He was on the wrong side of going after Bin Laden. He was the vote no on sending SEAL Team 6.
So a few things that you may like from the Obama administration.
Right.
He was vetoing.
Right. At least Obama made the right calls on that. But we pulled it, Mike. Our team was able to pull it. Take a listen. This is John McCain flashback to 2014 on Tony Blinken when he was up for Deputy Secretary of State.
Madam President, I rise to discuss my opposition to the pending vote concerning Mr. Tony Blinken, who is not only unqualified, but in fact, in my view, one of the worst selections that of a very bad lot that this president has chosen. I hope that many of my colleagues will understand that not often do I come to the floor to oppose a nomination of the President of the United States. In this case, this individual has actually been dangerous to America and to the young men and women who are fighting and serving it.
I mean, that is a pretty strong statement.
Yeah, from John McCain.
Who did not make, like he said, he was not someone. Usually he was coming down the floor was to attack Republicans, voting to keep the Affordable Care Act. Remember with his Romanesque touchdown?
His moment.
But when it came to our military, he certainly was always concerned. I mean, this is a military guy, like him or not, as a politician. You can certainly respect his service. And, I mean, he called him dangerous. He's now the Secretary of State.
Yeah, so he said one of the most dangerous or something like that. I mean, it was pretty aggressive. Maybe I'm not sure I've heard that much aggression coming from John McCain, like you said, unless it was directed at Donald Trump or something like that. Let's go ahead and continue the phone calls. But thank you. Great call. Rita's calling in Arizona. You're on the air.
Hello, Jay. I just want to thank you for everything that you do and the information that you get out there to the American people. I just wish more Democrats would listen to you. But the thing I want to say is, how in the world did we hire 80 700 IRS agents, and we're only sending 1,700 military people to the border.
You got to clarify that number. Hold on.
That's 87,000.
Yeah, yeah.
Not 8,700. 87,000.
And only
new IRS agents, and we're sending 1,500 troops to the border. And when Donald Trump sent over 5,000 to deal with the crisis, it was done as a temporary measure while he was negotiating the wall and remained in Mexico being mocked for that. He was mocked. Joe Biden announces it. The news just reports it as news. Like, oh, he's doing something.
Yeah.
Because Title 42 is coming to a close. They told us they had no plans. And look, they actually are doing
something.
They're
going to send 1,500, right. But 80 times that we're going to hire for the IRS.
Yeah, I mean, if you were really taking it seriously, it would probably be in the 4,000 or 5,000 troops to back up the CBP. But they don't really want to stop illegal immigrants. They don't really care that you're the number one killer of Americans between 18 and 45 is a drug coming through the southern border, an illegal drug coming through the southern border made by the Chinese and then put together the components by the cartels. And they don't want to declare those cartels a terrorist group, even though they're killing more Americans than Al-Qaeda has ever killed and more rapidly. We'll go back to the phones at 1-800-684-3110.
Yeah, Alex in North Carolina on line one. You're up. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
No problem.
With the hundreds of thousands that have already come across the border and the many that are to come, has anyone done a cost analysis per person what is costing our government and us, the taxpayer?
Let's see.
I mean, not specifically.
The actual cost that this is to keep people in the United States? I mean, listen. We know when these cities get the individuals, they all are run down. I don't know if we've gotten one specific number from the federal government or an estimate yet from a specific number. What we do know is that when, like, New York City says they can't handle it economically.
It's probably an incalculable number.
Yeah. It's billions and billions and billions. They shut down cities and towns. They force hospitals to close because hospitals cannot provide enough services at no cost, and then they're not getting any money in, so they have to close. New York City itself, one of the largest metropolitan area in the United States, in a condensed size, said they can't deal with a few thousand because of the financial cost to the city. So I think the harm is immeasurable. It's not something you could just put on paper and say, hey, for $50 billion, we can handle this.
Yeah.
You know what their answer would be? Legalize all of them, and then you'll get their tax revenue.
Yeah.
Problem is, most new immigrants to this country are not going to be paying taxes because the jobs they're going to be taking are not going to be high paying enough to where you'd even be paying federal taxes.
It would be a while till that return happens. Let's go to Eric, who's
but not for the voting return.
True. Let's go to Eric in Colorado. You're up.
Hey guys, thanks for everything you do. I really appreciate it. Had a quick question. I wanted to see what your thoughts were on the Republican Congress. I know we're in the early stages and we passed the debt ceiling last week, but this doesn't seem to be overly effective, and I wanted to see your thoughts were on that and then going forward over the next couple of years.
The newly elected Republican Congress moving forward over the next couple of years, I think, listen, we are defensive Congress for at least the remainder of the Biden administration. What we need to turn into is, I think what is key, Logan, is that what we saw under President Trump is that you could drain the swamp so much as president, but if you do not have both the House and the Senate, and he lost the House, some of that work comes to a close.
Yeah.
So what we really need to see, the real reform change, I know most of you would like to see in Washington, is we'd have to have conservatives in control of the White House, the House, and the Senate for almost two full presidential terms. That's unheard of. That would be outstanding. And I think if you really want to see fundamental changes to institutions like the IRS and the FBI, at least give them 6 years. Because giving them four as president, but only two with the House and the Senate, they can only do so much. And then they end up playing defense because they get impeached twice. They've got special counsels coming after them. And so I think we've learned from that reality is that both the House and the Senate are extremely important if you're going to make significant change to how Washington operates. You got to have the presidency, true. But with the presidency, you've got to make sure you're constantly going to the voters to remind them about why you need the House and why you need the Senate. It's why, again, the census is important. It's why drawing those lines and congressional districts is so important. Support the work of the ACLJ. We're involved in all of that kind of work. ACLJ.org. Donate today. Secular Brothers podcast coming up this afternoon. It gets a little lighter, a little goofier, a little bit funnier.